you were here last week, you know we started it off a little bit different with a video. This morning we are going to do the same, kind of set the stage for us. This is a scene from what I think a lot of people would consider to be the biggest sports moment in the history of the United States. I'll just let the clip speak for itself, and we'll show the clip, and then we'll go on. Go ahead.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. Not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team. You were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired of hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
So that's the locker room scene before the U.S. would go out, defeat the Russians in the 1980 Olympics. Hopefully you guys know that well. But we're picking up where we left off last week, the pregame speech, that moment that is built for inspiring and for challenging. Last week it was Friday Night Lights. This week it's a scene from the height of the Cold War in a hockey locker room. That competitiveness, that fire, that drive, that determination, that bravado, that is all built up in that moment. Whether you're talking about football or hockey or a sales meeting, a political rally, there's something about that kind of pregame right before you're getting ready to go out and do something big, something amazing. There's something about that moment that is just so inspiring. Carefully chosen words designed to inspire, to provoke, to instill confidence and hope. It's a beautiful scene. I love it. I watch sports movies a lot. I've seen all kinds of them, and this is kind of the scene. This is what you always see. This is what you watch everywhere you go. And then we have that moment for us here now. We have that moment for us with Jesus. I've shown these two clips the last couple of weeks because these last couple of weeks, I think it kind of helps us see what Jesus is doing. He's sending out his men. He's sending out his team, the one that he picked by hand. Now, we talked last week about how that team is not necessarily the team that you would have picked, but it's the team that he chose, he picked by hand to send out. And so here he comes to inspire and to motivate. He needs to remind them of just how great they are and all the things that they can do and just how far they can go. This is what Jesus needs to do. This is what he's supposed to do. We talked last week about how he needs to bring the blind man back up, right? The blind man needs to come up and give a testimony about how he was blind his whole life, but now he could look out and he could see the disciples. And before they go out, they need to know this is Jesus that could do this. Right? He needs to bring the paralytic back up and say, do some jumping jacks, guy, and see what I've done for you, right? Like, how inspiring would that be? You go to a sales meeting and you have that kind of thing, you're going to be fired up. Like, yeah, I can sell this product. If this guy couldn't walk and now he's doing jumping jacks, I'm on board with that. I can sell that, right? That's what Jesus should do. But he doesn't do any of that, not anywhere close. In fact, what we're going to see is that he does, as he often does, he goes in the completely opposite direction. Instead of inspiring, he really tries to, it seems like, scare his team. Like, kind of talk them out of going on this mission. It's nothing that you would expect. Why would he do this? Why would Jesus come up here getting ready to send his guys out? Why would he not charge them up and get them fired up? He doesn't because he understands the mission that lies before them. And we're going to talk a little bit about this mission. We kind of previewed it a little bit last week, and to be truthful, we previewed it a long time ago when we were back studying the Beatitudes, back in the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 5. It's kind of the preseason talk. If you want to kind of continue the analogy, this is spring training. This is training camp whenever you're talking about the Sermon on the Mount. This is Jesus' first instruction to his team. You remember what he said? Do you remember what he talked about back then? All throughout the book of Matthew, we hear Jesus' message about the kingdom of heaven. We're told to pray a few chapters back that God's will be done and his kingdom come. And then last week, what we see is the commissioning of his disciples to go and to preach this message, that the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. That's what the book has been leading us up to. This kingdom. So what's the big deal about the kingdom? We've seen it over the last few weeks that the kingdom is the exact opposite of what you expect. First should be last. The mourners should be are blessed. That we should love our enemies. That we should care for the poor. That the poor in spirit are in fact the ones that are truly blessed and will see God. So let's go back and let's just read real quick, just very quickly, remind ourselves of what Jesus said in those Beatitudes. This is the pre-season speech, okay? Here's what he says. This is Matthew chapter 5, verse 2. And he opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. And blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." We'll stop there. That's the pre-season speech. Jesus kind of alluded to what was coming when the season showed up. And now it's time for the pre-game speech, that last little piece. Jesus is talking here about what it looks like to be a citizen of the kingdom of heaven first and a citizen of this world second. That's what he's teaching us. Now we're going to see this message from the pre-season come back as he sends them out. So turn with me to Matthew 10. Let's read our text for the morning. We're going to read through and then we're going to get through as much as we can this morning. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you, we're going to kind of extend this over 2 weeks. And there's a reason that I want to do this. And so we'll talk about that here in just a few minutes. So Matthew chapter 10, verse 16. "Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues. And you will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake, to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious of how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. Verse 24, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? We'll stop there. So this is not exactly the highly motivational approach here, right? This is not exactly the type of approach you would expect, or that we would expect to see before you're getting ready to send people out. There's no inspiration here. In fact, he pretty much says the opposite. What he says is, you guys are about ready to go out and take the field, so to speak, and the other team's probably going to destroy you. They're probably going to kill you. At the very least, it's going to go bad for you. Yay, go get them. Like, are you fired up now? Are you ready? Are you excited about this mission? Does this get you excited? Does this get you charged up? Does this feel like an emotional ploy by Jesus? It's anything but. He says, they've come after me, and I'm your coach, and they're going to come after you just the same. Be ready. Be ready. Go get them. Woo! There's nothing inspiring about that, but Jesus has his reasons, and we talked a little bit about it last week, because this mission is not like just some sales pitch. This mission is something bigger. And this week and next week are going to kind of dovetail a little bit, and I'll tell you, next Sunday is an International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. That's next Sunday. We're going to be doing that as a part of what we do on Sunday morning. We're going to be talking about a few different things. In fact, as elders, we've kind of been discussing making that more a part of what we do. We don't know what that looks like yet and what that's going to be, but long term, we want that to be a little bit more of what we do than just one day a week. And to that end, what I want to ask you guys to do this week, and think about that as we go through this message, what I want to ask you guys to do this week is begin our time of prayer for the persecuted church, not for one day next Sunday, but begin it this week, begin it today, and then throughout the week this week, take some time to pray for the persecuted church. Take some time to go on the internet and look up some resources about what is happening around the world. Our Facebook page this week, we'll try to link to some things for us. So if you follow our Facebook page, you can do that. We'll try to get some things out by email as well. But learn about what's going on throughout the world that ties directly into this passage. Hopefully you got the little bulletin on your way in that's ways that you can pray, like 10 ways that you can pray for the persecuted church that will help you as you go throughout it. We've talked about fasting the last few weeks. Maybe some of you should consider or would consider fasting for a meal a day or maybe a couple of meals this week in order to dedicate some time to the persecuted church and prayer to that end. The essence of this text is not easy. And I'll be honest with you, whenever I prepared this message, as I thought about this message all week and really the last couple of weeks leading up to it, I did not feel at all like I was qualified to preach this message or that I could really add a whole lot to what Jesus says. And so I don't want to get too carried away with certain things. I kind of just want to put it out there and let the words stand. And so we'll go through some of this stuff, but I really don't think I need to add a whole lot to what Jesus says here. I think a lot of what Jesus says will stand on its own and will challenge us enough. So let's just begin with some basic instructions that he gives them. This very first one, verse 16, behold, I am sending you out. We could stop right there, and that could be the text for our message. Behold, I am sending you out. We talk about this kingdom, but this kingdom is not some faraway kingdom that we hope to get to. You know, one of those songs that you sing about the old by and by, and one of these days I'll get to the kingdom, and this is not what this kingdom is. This kingdom is not some faraway thing that we hope to see one day, but maybe we will, or it just seems so off in the distance. What the scriptures tell us is that the kingdom is near. And what this tells us, when it says, behold, I am sending you out, is that this kingdom has ambassadors. This kingdom has representatives that will go out to spread this gospel, this message of the kingdom. We have been given that as Christians. We are ambassadors of this kingdom. If you follow Christ, if your life has been changed by Him, what this tells us is that you have been put on mission. I know this is a repeat from last week, but I'm okay with that. This is the essence of who we are and what we have. We do not retreat into a kingdom. As Christians, we don't retreat. We don't have that in us. That's not what we're called to. So He sends out His disciples. We too are sent with a message and with a mission. He sends us out and He basically says, this is the way it's going to look. This is what's going to happen. You're going to go out and you're going to be sheep among wolves. You're not going out with really anything to defend yourself, in the sense that you're going to go out with a message, and that's really all you're going out with. This is not a kingdom, and this is maybe something that the disciples should have begun to pick up on, because as you go throughout the Gospels, as we'll see, these guys clearly didn't get this. But a lot of these guys expected a political revolution, and that's what they thought the kingdom was going to be. They were ready to pick a fight, and Jesus says, you're getting ready to go out there among the wolves, and you're going to be like sheep. And the thing about sheep when they're around the wolves is they need a shepherd. They cannot defend themselves. They will not defend themselves. And this is what it looks like for us. We have a shepherd that leads us. We have a shepherd that is with us. And when we take our message into the world, we will be devoured if we go on our own. We need our shepherd. And Jesus says that we should be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And I don't want to press this too far. We could go read some commentaries the last week or two that are just crazy in how they try to press this and who we are and who we're not and all the different things that it goes through. But the serpent in the Bible is not very well represented, right? Like, we understand that. If you go back and you read Genesis, you read all throughout the Bible, being described as a serpent is not a good thing. But here it is a good thing. Here it is a good thing, because it's talking about how serpents act. And how do they act? They are cautious. They are slow to attack, and they will go through a lot more trouble to be undetected than they will to actually form an attack. We're to be careful in the way we approach others. But we're not to do it in a way that is crafty and wicked and deceptive, like the serpent that we see in Genesis. Instead, we are to be innocent. The word there, when it says innocent and doves, innocent as doves, it's the word for pure, not mixed with evil. And this may seem obvious to some, but our conduct matters as we carry out this mission. The way we carry out this mission matters. It takes wisdom, strategy, winsomeness. It takes care in how we live. I remember a guy, I'll tell you about a couple different things. My old job that I used to be at, part of what I did was ran outreach programs, Upward Basketball, Upward Soccer, was over these programs, and a big part of that, in fact, I would say the driving force behind that was not soccer or basketball, it was evangelism. That's the whole reason that those programs existed. Saw some great fruit, saw some amazing things happen through those programs, and some kids that became Christians that never would have otherwise through some of those programs. I got a phone call from a guy that said he was with a school. I couldn't remember the name of the school. It was a smaller school. But he was interviewing some people about their different types of evangelism methods. And somebody had given him our church's name, and he had somehow gotten in touch with me and asked if he could come and interview me for this paper that he was writing. I was like, well, I guess so. No harm there. We can do that. And so the guy shows up. Probably should have tipped me off when he showed up, and he was wearing basically a suit whenever he came to interview me on a weekday, and I was wearing my my sports shirt, actually. I was wearing like a sports camp t-shirt or something like that. We were clearly coming from two different worlds whenever it came to the way that we approached things with church. But we hung out, got to talk. He was a great guy, seemed to be a very godly guy. We went out to lunch, kind of went through how we did things, took an hour or so to explain kind of what our strategy was and how you form relationships with people. You get them involved in these sports leagues, and then you share the gospel with them, and kind of went through all that kind of stuff with him. And he was very polite. Okay, I got you. All right, and taking good notes and that kind of thing. And then as we left, we went to had to go by a gas station, had to get some gas. We were riding together in the car, had to get some gas. And as I got out to pump my gas, he got out of the car, which was like, what is this guy doing? And he went around the pump to the guy that was pumping the gas on the other side, handed out a tract, and said, "Do you know Jesus?" And the other person was clearly not interested in talking to him. And so here's this guy like in the full suit, and he's like, "You should take this track. It will tell you about Jesus. Do you know who Jesus is?" And they kind of, I mean, the other person was very polite, but clearly wasn't interested in the message. Guy came back around the corner, got in the car, and we drove off. And I watched as the person that had received the track kind of threw the track away, and they went on their own way. So it started this conversation between me and this guy, and I said, "So, like, do you do that a lot?" And he's like, "Yeah, I do that everywhere I go. Every time I stop and get gas, every time I go to the grocery store or whatever, I do that." I said, "All right, well, that's, you know, I admire your boldness and your courage, but do you have a lot of fruit from that?" And he said, "Well, I mean, I've started some good conversations with people," and I said, "Well, but, I mean, have you really, like, walked somebody through a track and led them to Christ?" And he's like, "Well, I've certainly prayed with some people, and yeah, I would say that I've done that." And I said, "Okay, well, I mean, I understand, I get what you're saying." And he said, "But I usually just get people that basically kind of yell at me, or at the very least dismiss me. That's typically the response." And I said, "Yeah, I totally understand that. I would have probably done the same thing." I said, "So let me ask you, do you think that approach, what you're doing, is wise? Do you think it's the best approach?" And he said, "Yeah, absolutely I do. I think that we need to make every moment." And he said, "This whole idea of forming a relationship with someone and sharing the gospel with them and just loving and thinking that you need to love and care for people before you share the gospel with them, I don't think that's biblical at all. I think we just need to share the gospel with people every chance that we get." I was like, "Wow. I mean, we just spent an hour and a half talking about the way that we do our evangelism here at this church and with our strategy with Upward, and you pretty much just said that everything that we do is unbiblical and not wise." I was like, that's pretty bold for you to say that. He's like, "Well, that's just what I feel." And I don't want to run down what he's doing there. Like I said, I think he was truly a godly guy. I think that he was very godly in the sense that he truly was trying to do what God had called him to do. And I do think that there are times where you can use a tract, and that approach may work and may be exactly what we've been called to. But our strategy makes a difference. And I said, "Well, what about this passage where it says to be wise as serpents and innocent and doves in the way that we approach?" And he said, "Well, the tract is the how I think that that's accomplished. That's where I see the strategy in that and the way that those tracts are made." And I was like, "Really? That's going to be the best approach that you can have with that? That's going to be how you want to do that?" I'm not sure how familiar you guys are with tracts. There's some that I've used that are helpful. There's some that we've used whenever we go through 101 that are helpful. I got one in the mail the other day. Can you put that picture up, Matt? The picture of the one I got in the mail. Yeah. So that was in my mailbox the other day. No like address, so somebody had come by and like dropped it off. And this is Dumb and Dumbest. And so whenever you read this, the front part has like dumb things people have done before. And then when you read the back, it says, basically it lays out the gospel and it says, "Don't be dumb too." That's the approach. Like, I read that and I'm like, who thinks this is wise? Let me insult you and call you dumb and then say you need to do what this card says and so that you're not dumb too. That was what was in my mailbox. Now, not all tracts are like that. I will say, if you leave the $1 million bill, like for a tip, that's not good. Don't use the $1 million bill for a tip. $1 million bills don't trick anybody. They just make people mad. If you're going to leave that, you need to leave a good tip with that. I say all that to say, I think that it's important on how we go out. And as Jesus sends out his disciples, he gives them a mission and he tells them to be wise. And what I want to encourage you is to do the same, to go out on mission and be wise, be winsome, be loving, be caring. The message that we take is not one that we can just kind of throw out there carelessly. It gives us, Jesus gives us the ability and the reasoning to come behind this and to be strategic in the way that we share the gospel. Be strategic and be wise. Now, be bold. I would love to be as bold as that guy was. That guy's boldness was wonderful. And I pray that he has a lot of fruit from what he does. But be wise in the way that you carry out this mission. Our methods matter. Our methods do matter. But it doesn't matter how much we manage to craft our message. It doesn't matter how well we manage to put it together. It doesn't matter how winsome we become. The reality is the gospel will never be something people want to hear. It's clear that Jesus has something else in mind for his disciples, something more than this motivational rah-rah speech. He knows that the mission that he's about to send them on is no joke. It isn't hockey. It's real life, and eternity hangs in the balance in this mission. The mission thus far has been Jesus' mission to carry out, but now he hands it over to his disciples, and it will require everything from them. In fact, what he tells them is that it will almost certainly require their very lives. It is one thing for you to stand up as a coach and call men to give everything to win a football game. It is one thing for you to stand up as a coach and to call people to go out and give their all to play well. It is entirely different for you to call someone to die. And that's what Jesus does. And this has always been and will always be the call of Jesus. To follow Jesus is to come and die. You will die to yourself, and your physical life will be put on the line as well. He hints at it in the Beatitudes, and then he makes it explicit here. Do you realize how difficult this is? How difficult it is to stand in front of people and to challenge them and to motivate them and to press them to do something that may cost them their lives. He's sending men on a mission that he knows will cause them pain, hunger, imprisonment, homelessness, family strife, hatred, even death. How do you call someone to that? I've thought about this a lot as a pastor. The same mission that Jesus calls us to here is the same mission that I am calling you to this morning. It's the same. It's the message of the kingdom. What Jesus does here is what I pray we do well here at Providence, and that is to call you on mission. And this is what Jesus says will happen when you go on mission. How can you feel comfortable standing up and calling someone to do something that will cost them everything? And this is Jesus. This is Jesus' mission that he is giving. Doesn't that feel a little bit arrogant for Jesus to stand up and do that? Doesn't that feel a little bit arrogant for Jesus to stand up and say, I think you should go and do this. I think you should go and tell the world about me. And it will cost you everything. How can Jesus ask these men to do this? The only way Jesus can ask these men to do this is if it is true. Is if he knows what he teaches is true. If this world is truly not our home. If it is truly better to follow Christ than to live for this world. If what Jesus teaches is true, that he is the Son of God, that he is worthy of our worship and our lives, that there is more for us in the life to come than anything this world can offer. If our life is truly but a breath and then it's gone and then eternity waits for us, If that is true, then the most compassionate thing Jesus can do is to call us to give up everything here in light of eternity. And that is what he does. This would be arrogant for me to ask you to unite with the mission of Providence Church and give everything for Providence Church if the mission of Providence Church was anything less than God's mission. It would be arrogant for anyone, any CEO, to stand up and say, give your life for this cause, for this company. But it is not arrogant for Jesus. Because Jesus knows that in the end, eternity waits for us. And when he calls us to die, he has eternity in mind. When Jesus calls his disciples on mission, he doesn't flinch. He doesn't back down. There's no hesitation, no regret. And why not? Why not? It's because he knows what eternity is. In 2013, a man named Ronnie Smith had gone out for a light jog. He didn't return home that night from the jog. He was a teacher. He had heard about a call from a pastor to go halfway around the world and share the name of Jesus. So he went and he taught at an international school in Benghazi in Libya. He went there and he lived there and he taught at this school, and he knew when he left it wasn't safe, but he took his family, his wife, his daughter. He went to teach at this school. The family had gone back home at this time. Finals were approaching. They had gone back home a couple days earlier. He was going to be coming back home to Texas in just a couple days. But he went out and went for a jog. As he was out jogging, he was shot in the head. He was murdered. He died. Made national news. It was on the nightly news. His murder was covered. He had gone to share the message of Jesus, and exactly what Jesus had said would happen did happen. John Piper, who's a pastor that I quote a lot here, he was moved to post shortly after the news came out of Ronnie's death. You see, Ronnie had been deeply impacted by a sermon he had heard by John Piper. And Piper had been asked, how can you handle knowing this guy died as a result of some of the instruction that you gave, some of the challenges that you gave? And here's his response, and it's going to come up on the screen because it's a little bit lengthy, but I want you to hear what he says, and I want you to consider your own life. Piper says, Ronnie is not the first person who has died doing what I have encouraged them to do, and he won't be the last. If I thought death were the worst thing that can happen to a person, I would be overwhelmed with regret. But the whole point of Ronnie's life is that there is something worse than death. So he was willing to risk his own life to rescue others from something far worse. And he could risk his own life because he knew his own risking and dying would work for him an eternal weight of glory. And he knew God was able to meet every need of his wife and his son. We are not playing games. When I preach that risk is right, I know what I'm doing. When I say God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him, especially in suffering, I know what suffering may mean. When I say fear not, you can only be killed, quoting Jesus, we'll look at this next week. Fear not, you can only be killed. I take seriously the words of Jesus. Some of you they will put to death, but not a hair of your head will perish. There's a little bit more to that post. You can look it up if you want to go see it. But this gospel that we preach and that we proclaim gets people killed all around the world. And it will cost you. Even here in the U.S., I know things look differently here, and we can talk about what's persecution, what's not persecution. The reality is, to go on mission means you have to die to yourself. But just as he said here, there's something worse than death. And that's not knowing Christ. The mission of Jesus demands our lives, and it is worth it. When God calls us to come and die, He is not calling us to misery, but to joy. Do you understand that? When He calls us to come and die, He is not calling us to misery, but to joy. When He calls us to sacrifice, He is calling us to a life of immeasurable satisfaction and joy. Jesus knows what He's doing when He sends these men out on mission. And He knows what He's doing when He calls you out on mission as well. There's several ways that we could respond to this message this morning. You can respond throughout the week in the way that you pray for the persecuted church. You can respond as you pray and you consider not just the persecuted church, but those who persecute. That there would be a Paul among those persecutors that would change the world. You can be one who goes. I don't know what this stirs in you. I don't know if something presses you, but you can go. Whether you're talking about Guatemala, or you're talking about Nepal, or you're talking about New York City, there'll be opportunities for you to go. Or whether you're talking about going for good and going someplace to spread the gospel where they've never heard. But for some of you, the way that you respond to this is to realize that you've not been living for something greater than yourself. You've just been living for yourself. And this idea that there's a kingdom that is greater than you and is worth giving everything up for is not something that you've given your life to. So my encouragement to you this morning is to repent, to turn from running your own life and to give your life over to this King and to the mission of this kingdom. This is what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, nothing less. This passage is about discipleship. It says that the disciple will never be greater than his teacher. This passage is about discipleship. And this is what it looks like to be a disciple, to live on mission. The mission of the kingdom is the work of his disciples. And that is our mission today. So respond however you need to this. But remember, there's something worse than death. And eternity hangs in the balance on this mission. Will you pray with me? Father, this morning we are challenged to live life on mission. And we scarcely know what that means. As we consider what it would cost us, what it may mean for us, it's so easy to be intimidated. As we hear this speech that you give, it's so easy to miss the joy that is there. But Father, you call us on this mission because you know that this mission is worth everything that we give for it. And that our lives are but a breath, and then they are over. Father, may we be ready for that day. And may we help others be ready for when that day comes. It's in Christ's name we pray.